A61, Syllabus 1, Number 1A.
Yes, now, what is our subject? I want to talk first about the subject itself, what we want to achieve this week, what we do not want to achieve this week, so that we are very clear about the frame within which we want to lead the discussion. Well, we always have to go out from the right starting point, which is the infinite one. This is our starting point. From there we go out. We are not going out from any human suggestions. We are not going out from human problems. The only way to start in science is to go out from the fact that God, what is called God, is the infinite one, the infinite one being. No matter if we call it the Supreme Being or if we call it God or whatever we call it, it is that concept that being is one and is infinite. Now this is a starting point practically of all higher religions, so there is nothing extraordinary about it. Only when we begin to reason further from the infinite one, from God or the Supreme Being that is all, we must be clear that we begin to reason from the infinite one through the seven synonymous terms that Mrs. Eddy has given us as the nature of this infinite one. Those seven synonymous terms constitute the nature of what is called God, and in a way I think at once we realize that if we study the seven synonymous term for God, we somehow should see that we are engaged in one of the biggest subject, no, not in one of the biggest, in the biggest subject, really, that we can contemplate in our life. There is nothing bigger than to contemplate what is the nature of this eternal, infinite, one being, the Supreme Being. And here again, I think we have also to nurture always that great awe which we should have for Mrs. Eddy's discovery, that she, as the very first one, as far as I know of religious history, was the one that could reduce the infinite into categories that are complete enough to encircle, embrace the whole nature of being. This is one of Mrs. Eddy's greatest achievements as a scientist, not as a religious leader, but as a scientist, to be able to find those categories of the nature of being that would enable us to understand the infinite one, and therefore to be able to grasp the infinite one. Without that, a subject cannot be stated in its science, because science means that you can break up the subject into such categories that when these categories are understood and the relationship between these categories are understood, we can compute infinity, that we can compute any idea in this infinite one. This is the big discovery of Mrs. Eddy. Every science, whatever a science is, and it always has an infinite subject, science is characterized by the fact that the subject under consideration can be categorized in definite categories and therefore can be understood. Because the infinite as an infinite whole can never be understood as a whole, or we would have to be bigger than the whole. Therefore, a science has as its aim to reduce the infinite to a few single categories that can be grasped by a student, that can be understood by a student, and if we know how these categories interrelate, then we can calculate or compute infinite individual facts within this infinite whole. Therefore, we should be able really to find the answer for all our questions, for all our life problems. Now, this is so big that I feel that one can't renew one's love, one's admiration, one's awe of this very fact enough, that it is actually something that I like to renew every day, to feel I'm working on a subject that is so big, that is so tremendously big, that I feel most not only happy, but impressed by the grace of God, by the grace of being, that I would be one of those few who really know about this science of being, about Mrs. Eddy's presentation of the one infinite in its system. If you think just for a moment, say, that on this earth live round about 4 billion people, you know what 4 billion is? 4 billion is 4,000 million. 4,000 million people, and perhaps there are only about 400 on this globe that have seen that the infinite can be understood through its system, then you would see that you are one out of 10 million people who somehow, through grace, has touched you. That one out of 10 million, you have been chosen to have a love and an admiration and a evaluation and devaluation of this whole concept. And then I think if you feel that you are one out of 10 million, you feel really blessed. You feel really, this is a gift of grace given unto me by the working of God's power. And somehow, therefore, we should also feel the responsibility to hold this secret really holy and pure, and to feel the responsibility to take a stand for it and to give to this subject our life, our hopes, our love, our time, our energy, everything we have. Only then do we really evaluate that somehow we are chosen by grace to know about this aspect of being. And don't forget, mankind has struggled through all the last, say, 2,500 years to be able to find a way how to understand the Infinite One. Every religion, every philosophy has tried to understand what is being. What is there in this being? What's all about with this being? What is the purpose of it? And they have all tried one or the other way, and none of them has found a ordered, scientific, understandable, provable, learnable way to get hold of this subject. So in this way we begin to feel the bigness of our study, and therefore our study is not just, well, a hobby that we have. We could have just any other hobby. It is something that we have to take really in its depth and in its great impact on the present universal world consciousness. So if we see that the Infinite One is reduced to a system of which the category of the nature of being can be stated through the seven synonymous terms, then naturally we see that if we devote our time to investigate what is meant by these seven synonymous terms is of super important importance, is super important, and that therefore we really should be aware of what we are doing. Now, when we think that Mrs. Eddy has given us these seven synonymous terms for God, we must see that she has given these terms not in the ordinary meaning of the terms, that she had capitalized these terms, terms that are used in ordinary language, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, is used all over the place in every newspaper, in every book, in conversational language, all over the place. But these are not the terms that Mrs. Eddy means. By capitalizing these terms, she gave a new language. And we forget only too often that it is a completely new language. And I hope that during this week we get the feel of this new language of spirit, that it is actually not an American language, where the terms mind and spirit and soul, etc., are used, but that actually she built a bridge to the language of spirit that is wholly spiritual by trying to show us that by capitalizing these seven terms, she gives a spiritual impact of those terms that are very different from the common use in languages. That mind and mind mean something very different. That spirit and spirit mean something very different. The moment is capitalized, the language means not just a bigger sense of those terms which are written in lowercase. It is therefore not so that we can take those seven terms from the ordinary language and just make them bigger, a bit holier, a bit more supreme. Just overform these terms and say, well, they mean something higher. They mean something different. And therefore we cannot learn from those terms in lowercase what these terms in capitalized letters mean. Did you follow me up to this point? Sometimes it's not quite as easy to express the non-capitalized terms and the capitalized terms. It therefore means, you see, that actually what Mrs. Eddy wants to convey is spiritual reality in its deepest sense, in its deepest structure. She wants to present this deep structure of reality which is spiritual and which cannot be adequately spelled out in human language. Because human language is limited, is ambiguous in its meaning. You have terms that mean a lot of different things, the same term, that mean all sorts of things. You know, when you take Webster and look up a term, and it says, well, first this and this, second this and this, third this and this, and goes right down perhaps to 20, 21 different meanings, meaning that the term itself does not convey the meaning. There is something more to terms that are needed in order to understand the spiritual meaning. Therefore, Mrs. Eddy had that great difficulty in spelling out through a limited language called English to spell out the deep language of spirit. Actually, and this is the, I think, what we have to see, the deep structure language of reality cannot, never can, be really properly represented in any language. Every human language is inadequate, and that's what she says all over the textbook and in prose work, that language is inadequate to really to define what is meant spiritually. But we must see that if there is somewhere a difficulty which we encounter, which she had encountered, that we just don't give up, but that we say, isn't there a method of approximation which is good enough to lead perhaps thought to that approximation where then thought can take over and perhaps by itself make the last step, the last jump, and begins to touch the spiritual language. Now this is what Mrs. Eddy tried to do, among others, with the capitalized terms. That those capitalized terms build, so to say, a bridge from the human language to the language of spirit. And as we go through this week, we'll see it over and over how a true, clear, disciplined concept of the English language, the meaning then of the terms, then especially then the principle of synonymy, helps us to free ourselves from the terms and get slowly into the rhythm and into the touch of the spiritual. All right, now here we are with the seventh synonymous term. We see its bigness, its importance of the capitalized terms. We see that they are, so to say, the building blocks of reality. Just as in arithmetic, we have perhaps the 10 digits as the building blocks for arithmetic. So the seven synonymous terms are, so to say, the great building blocks of the nature of being. Therefore, they need our full attention. And I say that why? I say it because we can never say, I have finished studying the seventh synonymous term. That any study we do on the synonymous term is never a study that has come to its climax, where we can say, I have done it. I think all through our life we will feel, oh, I haven't quite seen the import of mind and spirit and soul. And we every year, every other second year or so, we feel, I would like to investigate those synonymous terms again. And we should never have a feeling, I have done it. If you encounter a student who says to you, when you tell him, well, I'm studying the seventh synonymous term, if they say, oh, we have done that so and so many years ago, then you know he hasn't got it. He hasn't got it. They are so big and so deep in their meaning that it takes our lifetime to get the right feel of it, the right tonality of it, the right use of them. It's therefore a lifelong study, a lifelong polishing of those seven synonymous terms. Why? Because they have to replace in our consciousness a false sense of those seven terms. They have to replace those terms in lowercase that are ingrained in our consciousness. Meaning actually that the study of the seventh synonymous term is not just a study, It is a change of consciousness. It is a change of the inner attitude of consciousness. The attitude of consciousness which we are not thinking about, but a consciousness that begins to speak within ourselves a new language. And to get out of the old frame of reference and to culture ourselves into a consciousness that naturally and immediately and intrinsically feels, speaks, acts, thinks in this new language, the seventh synonymous term, that takes some culturing. If it would be so easy that we just could study them earnestly for 2 years and then we would have it, and if we would have achieved that actually, then we can be quite sure that we would have revolutionized the world. If our consciousness would really be soaked, so to say, could you say soaked with the seventh synonymous term, you know, that our consciousness just wouldn't act and think and feel in any other way but in the line of the seventh synonymous term, we would have revolutionized the world. But we haven't. We haven't. And therefore, this is just a sign that we haven't really touched deep enough the meaning of the seven. So, we have to be also very much aware how we approach the subject. If we have set the aim of getting a new consciousness, a consciousness that is really stamped, so to say, by the seven big nature of being, then we must ask, well, how can I approach this revolution in consciousness so that I actually exchange the wrong for the right and not the wrong for another wrong. Just by saying I'm studying the seventh synonymous term does not mean that we exchange the wrong consciousness for the right, because we can study the seventh synonymous term wrongly. And then what we do is just to exchange a wrong consciousness for another wrong consciousness. And we can have a very wrong consciousness about the seven synonymous terms, because those seven synonymous terms have a very definite meaning. And unless we get that very definite meaning, we get an indefinite meaning. We get the wrong meaning. So the method of how to approach is super important. Or we spend all our life and all our energy on a study that leads nowhere. Therefore, we cannot be clear enough and disciplined enough and pure enough in our approach so that we really feel we are using the right method. When I say that, then I say that out of a very obvious reason. Namely, as you know, the whole Christian Science movement, all the students of the textbook somehow read the textbook. The textbook is full of these synonymous terms. In the average, you have about 5 to 6 synonymous terms on each page. But if we don't know what these terms mean, you agree with me that we read the textbook wrongly. We read it as it is stated, but we read it with a consciousness that is wrong. Therefore, how can we get hold of the right meaning of these seven synonymous terms? Well, we know how over the last 100 years, millions of people have studied the textbook they all somehow knew that the answer to the textbook is in the understanding of those seven synonymous terms. Somehow they all knew it. But what they didn't know is that they didn't have a right concept of these seven synonymous terms. What did they do? They read those terms and put their meaning into the seven synonymous terms. Their meaning. Not the meaning of the synonymous terms themselves. They read mind and had their concept of mind. They read spirit and they put into spirit their concept of spirit. And so with each synonymous term. Especially when it comes to love, they put their meaning of love, which is usually a Christian sense of love, a humanistic sense of love, into the synonymous term love. And therefore lose, naturally, the teaching of the textbook. Or you think about the approach of many of the students that say, I have to read it through inspiration. An inspirational way of knowing what is mind and spirit and soul and so on. Well, inspiration isn't good enough for a scientific subject. Inspiration usually means the human subconscious. It may mean the humanly collective subconscious. But this is all psychological human mind stuff. Inspiration is not the way to deal with a scientific subject. To deal with a scientific subject means that we use scientific criteria in order to come nearer to the subject itself. So this is something we should be very clear about it, that we ourselves discipline ourselves, so to say, into really wanting first and then trying to go along scientific criteria in order to analyze what is the meaning of those seven synonymous terms. Else, we only put again our humanly subjective meaning into these divinely objective reality facts. And this doesn't do the job. We have known historically that before John Dorley's era, which we can call the pre-Dorley era, that up to that point, the whole movement, all the students of Christian Science, were just projecting into these seven synonymous terms their concept of the seven synonymous terms. John Dorley was then the first one to come and say, we should do it the other way around. We should say, we do not know what the seven synonymous term mean. That's our starting point. We do not know what they are, and we are not going, therefore, to project into them our concept of them. But what we are going to do, we begin to reason from the seven synonymous terms. How can we reason from the seven synonymous terms when we don't know them? And so he could see the method to choose is first to analyze through all the statements of each of the seven synonymous terms, to analyze first a approximating understanding of the seven synonymous terms. To ask, therefore, and that is what is in the syllabus study, to ask, therefore, what does Mrs. Eddy say what mind is? Not what do I feel or think what mind is. This naturally means that we go out from one big axiom, which we have to accept at the out from the start, namely, that the textbook is God-inspired. This is our axiom. Without that axiom, I think I would drop the textbook and leave it aside. The axiom is that we believe, and on this we live now, that we believe that it is a revelation that has shown to Mrs. Eddy over 45 years nearly, the nature of the seven synonymous terms. Because it has taken her from 1866 to 1910 to polish and polish and polish that textbook and change the seven synonymous term and the qualities expressing the seven synonymous term over and over and over. From one edition to the next edition, she changed the synonymous terms in the text, changed the qualities and the attributes of the seven synonymous terms over and over and over up to nearly 1910. So we go out from the fact that Mrs. Eddy was transparent enough for truth's revelation of itself to hear the exact meaning of the seven synonymous terms. That's our axiom. That we can rely on Mrs. Eddy's use of the seven synonymous term as depicting the nature of deity. Without that premise, I think the whole study is only speculation.